So I said, Steffi, I'm an optimistic person. I'm generally one of the most optimistic people I know, really. I said, I'm scared to death, and I want to come and share my fear with this group, because if I'm right and we don't do something about it, then I've made a lifetime mistake, and so has everybody else. Let me share with you what's driving that fear. And the net summary is, we talk about the future of work as if that's a problem for the future. It's not. Right now, today, let me share some data with you, because I like things that can be measured. I grew up at Hewlett-Packard. I started at HP in 1966. It was a $200 million a year company, and I was on the startup team that helped introduce the first computer. So I've been living in Palo Alto, and I've kind of been in the eye of the storm, a birth lock. I just heard a number from Siemens. They employ 350,000 people. And I thought about the four most valuable companies on the face of the earth: Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft. And I quickly looked up on Google how many people they employ. Added up, they employ just about half of what Siemens does, all four companies in total. And you start looking at the comparative numbers, you say, well, we have a problem. Two worlds. My daughter just graduated from Stanford two or three years ago, master's degree, computer architecture, AA. She got a job in a startup like every graduate from Stanford. She got lucky, Salesforce bought the company, so she had a little nest egg. Stayed there for a year or so, came home, time to start a new company, Dad. Two guys that founding it, they wanted her to be the lead engineer. She said, what should I do for salary? I said, look, you made a little money. Why don't you take as little money as you need to live on and take as much stock as they will give you? My wife, her mom, is also a venture capitalist, and so we like equity. So she decided that she'd made, and I shouldn't go into this, but she'd made over 100K in her first job, probably a lot more than that. She thought 50K might be a good number, and I'm giving you approximate numbers, so don't quote me. And okay, you can live on that, go do it. She comes home the next night, she said, Dad, I can't do that. I said, why not? She said, did you know that there's a minimum wage in the state of California for programmers? I said, there is. And I went on Google and I looked it up, $85,000. You've got to pay a programmer who's, you know, their qualifications, $85,000 minimum wage. And then I thought about the minimum wage for the person that works at McDonald's, or the minimum wage in America, it's about $15,000. And then I thought about what happened when Seattle raised their minimum wage to $30,000. It became the test bed right now in fast food stores for putting in automation that's going to get rid of people that were making $15,000 that now have to be paid $30,000, because at $30,000 it pays the companies to put the equipment in quickly rather than pay the people $30,000. This week's going to be an interesting week. I think it's tomorrow, or probably Tuesday. Amazon opens its first grocery store in Seattle. If you haven't seen the video, you walk in. If you've got your Apple Pay or any device that identifies you as a customer, you walk through bars. They know you're there. You get a cart. You put everything in the cart, and you walk out. You just literally walk through the thing, and after you're out, your Amazon Prime account has been charged. There's a place where you can either take the cart to your car and put the stuff in, or take the box and go. 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I asked my daughter when the last time she'd been in a grocery store. They get everything online now. Kids don't do that. I think about, we just did a company called Jet. We sold Jet to Walmart. $3 billion. The CEO of Jet said he wasn't going to take the money if Walmart would not make him the CEO of Walmart.com. They did. I know Mark Lorry because he did diapers.com and soap.com before this. And he knows how to run a modern business. He beat Amazon selling diapers. Diapers.com, Amazon couldn't beat him even if they gave the diapers away at cost, because he understood how to, one, build an audience, and two, make a profit. So Amazon bought him. He sat there for 2 years, went out and started Jet. Now he's going to be the CEO of Walmart. We've got 1 million people who run a cash register in the United States. Over the next 10 years, we don't need any one of them. So I ask you this question before I sit down and join the panel. Here's the statistic that really made me scared. I'm past retirement age. And I started looking up numbers on the internet. What happens to people who retire? How long do they live? Well, it turns out there's three categories. If you retire normally and you choose to retire and you stay active, meaning you do something meaningful after you retire, you're probably going to live a normal lifespan, whatever your lifespan would have been, adjusted for illnesses, etc. You're a healthy person, you're 65 or 70, you say it's time, and you stay involved. You're a healthy person, you retire voluntarily, and you go home and sit on the couch and drink beer and watch TV, your life expectancy goes down about 50% compared to the person who stays active. If you are forced to retire before you're 65, you can expect to live 1 or 2 or 3 years. You look at the death rates, which people can measure, and you look at all the studies that have been done, and I sit here and say, okay, what are we going to do about it? We're going to displace millions of people, not in the future, starting right now. And the reason I wanted to talk to you is I think you can solve the problem. We heard a story about the 65-year-old lady who started a cosmetics business. She probably had an unusual set of skills. I think every human being has self-worth. And most people that I know, even if they're on that cash register, they're driving a car, they're an accountant or whatever, they have a hobby, they do something. How can you use the technology that we have and will have to create a platform and environment where I will say the average person can join the on-demand economy and figure out something for themselves that lets them use this power of technology to have meaningful self-worth? If we don't do that, I would simply suggest to you that you read one book, and the book is called Hillbilly Elegy, and it is the story of the people from Scotland who came to America, who worked first in the coal mines, and then in the steel mills, and then in the automobile industry, who lived in Virginia, who lived in North Carolina, who lived in Pennsylvania, who lived in Michigan. For those of you that follow elections, the states that Trump won, who for their entire lives voted for the other party, and finally, after watching what happened to them and the drug epidemics that whole population went through, basically said, the hell with it, I can't take this anymore, I'm going to take a crapshoot. Well, we're going to add a lot more hillbilly elegies to the world population. Not in the future. We shouldn't talk about the future of work now. So the challenge to you is, we all, I think, like the lives we have. We're doing exciting things. We're getting paid pretty well for it. We're optimistic about the future. As the CEO of Pepsi, who I'm on a board with, said to me, Joe, shut up. You live in a bubble. You're in the 1%. And we do live in a bubble. That bubble is subject to being shattered in ways we don't like. We have control of what we do. I think it's up to our innovation. It has to do with the self-worth of everybody and creating an environment now where we can all play. Thank you very much.